Hello, and welcome to You Can't Make This Shit Up, a true crime podcast. I'm Cassie.
And I'm Mark, her dad, a true crime professional. I'm currently a traffic homicide detective in South Florida.
And we hope you guys enjoy. This is our 17th episode.
Wow.
And that's very exciting because 17 is my lucky number.
Okay.
So as we promised in one of our previous episodes, this week we're going to be covering an Irish case.
Oh, nice.
It's the disappearance of Elaine O'Hara. The case was actually suggested by one of our Irish listeners. Her name is Lisa. So hi, Lisa.
Hey, Lisa. Thanks for the case.
Yeah, this one's pretty wild. So oh, yeah? This was definitely a good suggestion. It's definitely a crazy case.
Oh, good. Okay.
Her name's Elaine O'Hara, which is an awesome name.
Elaine or Elaine?
Elaine O'Hara. Oh, Elaine. It sounds like she should be like an actress or like a writer or something.
Yeah, right. It's like a Hollywood name.
Yeah. So she was born in Dublin, Ireland on March 17th, 1976. So it's crazy that this is the 17th episode. And she was also born on the 17th, which is also the same day I was born, but a different month. Lots of 17s, you know, connecting the dots. So once Elaine reached her teenage years, she experienced some major tragedies. She was reportedly severely bullied in school.
Okay.
Were you ever bullied in school?
I was not.
Really? Like never?
No.
Well, honestly, you're such a big guy. People were probably like, I ain't fucking with him.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's exactly what it was. Like, I kind of stopped people from bullying, believe it or not.
I was like, bullied like in middle school. I hated middle school. Remember, people used to call me, so I'm like blonde and like pale skinned.
Right.
And people used to call me Casper, like after the ghost.
Well, I always had to wear like husky. So I'm sure somebody poked fun at me for my size at some point, but I don't remember being like bullied the way kids are bullied today. I mean, that didn't happen. I did get, you know. Well, I was jumped.
So yeah, long story short, I knew this story. He was jumped, but only because basically it was a case of mistaken identity. They thought right. He was somebody else and jumped him.
Yeah, they beat me up. So,
well, unfortunately, Elaine was pretty severely bullied. I couldn't find specific examples of like how she was bullied, but in multiple sources, it says that she like didn't have a very good like high school experience.
That sucks. Okay.
So during that time, Elaine also lost her best friend in a car crash. Mm. So according to the Irish Independent, both the bullying and the death of her friend led to Elaine withdrawing a lot socially. And she also at that time began self-harming. So like cutting herself and stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
When Elaine was only 16, she attempted suicide for the first time by slitting her wrists.
Jeez, okay.
So following her suicide attempt, Elaine's parents, they did the right thing and they sought out mental health care for their daughter. Elaine began seeing Professor Anthony Clare, and he diagnosed her with depression and borderline personality disorder. Do you know borderline personality disorder?
I do.
I don't. I mean, I've heard of it, obviously, but I like didn't know really like what the symptoms were and stuff. So I looked it up.
Right.
The main symptoms of borderline personality disorder are an intense fear of abandonment, self-image issues, difficulty managing emotions and behavior, and a pattern of unstable relationships.
Yeah. Characteristically, like in my experiences, it's always been kind of like the fear of not fitting in or not feeling well about yourself, even though you may be, you know, like people that are like in shape, but still feel like they're not, or they're not good enough or whatever. That's kind of, it falls in that category. So
yeah. And supposedly, cause I was like, well, I wonder like what causes it. So I looked up the causes. They don't really know for sure what causes it, but they think that it's genetics play a big role. Like obviously if your parents have borderline personality disorder, it's more likely that you'll get it.
Right.
And also a stressful childhood. I guess there's a lot of cases where people who were either like abused mentally or physically.
Right. I was going to say that poor parenting or a lack of.
Yeah. And they also said that, I guess like abandonment as a child is like a big contributing factor. Like if your parents in some way, shape or form abandon you.
Right.
It's interesting because Elaine, like by all accounts, her parents were like wonderful. So I guess it must in her case have just been like some sort of genetic factor because by like all accounts, her parents were, you know, were good, solid parents.
Right. And maybe the bullying, you know, like socially, maybe she wasn't accepted. So that probably, you know, played a part.
So Elaine suffered from depression and borderline personality disorder. She also suffered from dyslexia, diabetes and asthma.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So she just kind of had a lot of like all around health issues.
Right.
So she was treated by Professor Clare for over 16 years for her mental disorders.
Wow, okay.
So it's from the age of 16 to the age of, I think, 36. Elaine was admitted to St. Edmundsbury Hospital 14 times during that period.
Wow, okay.
So that roughly, if you calculated it out, that's roughly once every 18 months.
Wow.
So in March of 2002, Elaine's mother died. And she experienced a major mental health setback. Elaine never fully recovered mentally or emotionally from her mother's death. She attempted suicide again in both 2005 and 2006 at the ages of 29 and 30.
Okay.
Her last attempted suicide was so severe that Elaine remained in a coma for 24 hours afterwards.
Well, okay. What did it say what happened that time? Was it like pills or something? Or
it didn't say specifically, but I would assume it's pills if she's in a coma.
Yeah, some type of medical or medication or something like that, yeah.
In 2005, Elaine moved out of her father's home in Killiney. So she'd been living in her parents' house throughout this whole time.
Okay.
Until 2005. Wow, okay. She moved into a garage, which had been converted into an apartment in Black Rock.
Okay.
She began working as a child care assistant at a daycare center there. She also began working part-time in a newsagent's. Do you know what that is?
A news agent? A news agent?
News agents.
News agents, no.
So I had to look it up. It's like an Irish like slang term kind of.
Okay.
It's actually like kind of like a bodega.
Oh, okay.
So it's like what they call a bodega.
Oh, all right.
Like where they sell like newspapers and stuff.
Yeah, like a little convenience store type deal or.
Yeah. So okay. She began working part-time there, as well as working in the daycare center. It was reported by people who knew Elaine that she had a really amazing work ethic. She loved working with children and she like quickly became a trusted employee at the school where she was eventually promoted to a key holding position. So in October of 2007, Elaine experienced another major setback when her lifelong psychologist, Professor Clare, passed away as well.
Oof, okay.
So following his death, Dr. Matt Murphy took over Elaine's care. Throughout her mental health treatment, Elaine repeatedly harmed herself and also encouraged sexual partners to harm her as she believed she was deserving of punishment.
Okay.
In 2008, Elaine moved out of her apartment in Black Rock and moved into an affordable housing unit in Stepaside, which how cool of a city name is that?
Stepaside or Stepside?
Stepaside.
Wow. Okay.
Step aside,
Ireland.
During this time, Elaine also began taking night classes in order to become a full-time Montessori teacher. So she had two jobs and was going to night school at the same time.
Wow. All while battling mental health and...
Yeah. So her medical records during this time stated that Elaine lived, quote, a very lonely life with no friends, and she found it difficult to trust people, end quote.
Okay.
The pressure of working two jobs and attending school was hard on Elaine. And in July of 2012, she called St. Edmundsbury Hospital and asked to be readmitted. She stated she was depressed, and she also told them at the time that she had tied a noose in order to hang herself before calling.
Oh, God, okay.
As later court documents would show, there's a subsection on her paperwork when she's admitted, and it was called Social Support Network.
Okay.
On her intake form. And the doctor who completed her intake form wrote under that, quote, supportive dad, no friends.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah. So she like had no friends is what she told them when she was admitted.
Right. Okay.
However, while in the unit, Elaine did make several friends and her mental health began to improve, according to both her dad and her new therapist, whose name was Stuart Colquhoun, I think is how you pronounce it.
Okay.
But if I said that wrong, sorry. One woman she befriended in the unit later said of Elaine, quote, Elaine just wanted to be loved. She just wanted some attention.
Right.
On the afternoon of August 22nd, 2012, Elaine went with her niece and her father to visit her mother's grave at around 3 p.m. The family paid their respects for about 10 to 15 minutes, and then they drove back to her father's house. Elaine left there around 4 p.m., and that was the last time that her family would ever see her.
Okay.
When her family hadn't heard from Elaine for some time, they reported her missing to the police. Initially, her family feared that Elaine had committed suicide, so they requested that the police conduct a welfare check. When they arrived at Elaine's apartment, there was no sign of Elaine, but she had left her purse and mobile phone inside of the home, which is never a good sign.
Right. Yep.
Still afraid that Elaine may have committed suicide somewhere else, the police searched surveillance cameras in the area and questioned witnesses. One witness came forward and told police that he had been jogging and remembered seeing Elaine. He said he'd been running at about 5 p.m. And this is a very Irish name. So if I mess okay. this up, just, you know.
Apologies.
Apologies and let me know how to say it right. Shangana?
All right.
Park.
Okay.
So that park is just south of Scankill.
Okay.
And Elaine had stopped him to ask him for directions to a footbridge that went across a railroad.
Okay.
So as he was jogging, he, you know, answered her and directed her to where it was. As he was jogging away, the witness noticed Elaine walking along the footbridge towards the ocean.
Oh, okay.
Upon hearing this, police and Elaine's family worried that Elaine may have jumped to her death over the cliffs. Upon looking at surveillance footage, the police saw Elaine leave her home with a cell phone in her hand, which is odd because her cell phone was inside.
Oh, okay.
It then became evident that Elaine had a second cell phone, which was unknown to her family. The police asked the family, you know, did you know she had two phones? And they're like, no.
Right. That's weird.
Yeah. Later, another witness came forward and told police that she had seen Elaine prior to her being seen in the park.
Okay.
She claimed she'd seen Elaine back at the cemetery where her mother was buried.
Right.
The woman claimed she'd seen a woman fitting Elaine's description crying loudly in front of an old grave, which is odd because obviously her mother's grave wasn't like an ancient grave. So
relatively new.
Yeah. So whose like grave was she crying in front of?
Hmm.
The witness claimed she couldn't be 100% sure it was Elaine. But later, when police went to search the cemetery, they found Elaine's car parked outside of it.
Really? Okay.
So it pretty much was her.
Right.
On September 10th, 2013. So this is about 2 weeks after Elaine was last seen. A fisherman named William Fegan was fishing with his brother and a friend at Vartry Reservoir in Wicklow. At that time, due to hot weather, the water level had fallen. So originally, the water level there normally is about 15 to 20 feet deep.
Okay.
But at this time, because of this like freak heat wave,
right,
the water level fell all the way down to about between 12 and 18 inches deep.
Oh, geez. Okay. A foot or so. Foot and a half.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the men, they're fishing near a bridge and they notice a bag sitting in shallow water under the bridge, like near the bridge.
Right.
And obviously it would have been covered back when it was thrown in. But because of the declining water levels, it basically started to show.
Right.
So upon opening the bag, inside they found handcuffs, clothing, a ball gag, restraints, and leg restraints inside.
Wow. Okay.
Would you have opened that bag?
Of course.
You would have? If you were just sitting around and you found that bag, you'd be like, let's see what's inside.
What type of bag? Was it like a garbage bag, a plastic bag?
I'm honestly not positive, but the way that all the sources I've read made it sound is that it was almost like a duffel bag.
I probably would.
I don't know if I would.
Just because you know that there's going to be nothing good in there.
I know, but that's what I mean. That's exactly why I wouldn't open it. I would be like, I'd call the police, like, listen, I found this bag. Don't want to open it. Because the last thing I want is like body parts to be in there or something.
Hello, I am the police.
Well, I know, but I'm saying if you were like just a civilian, like doing your, you know, just doing your thing.
Yeah, you never know. You might find $1 million.
Well, I mean, if I found $1 million. I'm keeping that baby. So the following day, Fagan brought the bag and the items to the police because he thought, even though there was nothing illegal inside, he thought the contents were too odd to ignore.
Yeah, they're little. Yeah.
Like, why would you be hiding all these like sex toys under the river or the lake?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The police decided to return to the spot where the men had found the bag to see if there was any further evidence there. So at this point, they still hadn't connected that like that stuff was related to Elaine's case.
Okay.
They were like, we agree. This is odd. We're going to go back to the spot and check it out.
Take a look around. Yeah. Okay.
So ultimately, the police searched the area over the next several days. And 6 days later, on September 16th, 2013, they found another set of handcuffs, keys, a leather mask, a knife, an inhaler, and a necklace with a ring on it.
In another bag or just in the area?
I think just from what it sounded like, just loosely, like they had all also been thrown into the lake.
Okay. All right.
But like not within a bag.
Right. Okay.
Upon examining the keys, it was discovered that a Dunn's Stores loyalty card on the key ring belonged to Elaine O'Hara.
Oh boy.
Believing that Elaine's body may be in the lake, the Gardaí, I love that.
Yeah, that's a cool name.
Yeah, they call their police the Gardaí there. I'm like, ooh! Yeah. The Gardaí water unit searched the entirety of the lake on both September 17th, 17 again, and October 7th.
Okay.
I'm telling you, sevens are running all through this shit.
Sevens.
They did not discover Elaine's body in the lake.
Okay.
But they did find two Nokia mobile phones, two mobile phone batteries, a pair of glasses, and a pair of sunglasses, and also a rucksack.
Wow. Okay.
The prescription glasses were eventually matched to Elaine O'Hara through store records.
Wow. Okay.
On August 21st, 2013, a dog trainer named Magalie Vergenet. What a cool name. Magalie Vergenet. So she was walking her dogs in a wooded area in Killikee, and that was like in the Dublin Mountains.
Okay.
Magalie frequently walked her dogs in that same area. But on this day, one of her dogs ran away and returned with some bones in its mouth.
Oh, okay.
At the time, Magalie assumed that they were animal bones. So she returned home, like didn't think anything of it. On September 13th, 2013, so this is nearly 2 weeks after Elaine disappeared, Magalie was walking her dogs in the same area again. And the same exact dog took off running and once again returned with bones in its mouth.
Oh, boy. Same spot.
Yeah, same area.
Okay.
However, this time there was clothing attached to the bones.
Oh, geez. Okay.
So obviously now Magalie is like, oh shit, these are not animal bones.
Right. Yeah. Something's awry.
So at that point, she contacted the landowner whose name was Frank Doyle, which also cool ass name, Frank Doyle.
It sounds like a gangster.
That's like the most like Irish name, like Frank Doyle. At that point, Frank and another man came to the property and helped Magalie search around the area to find the source of the bones.
Right.
In a clearing surrounded by trees, the trio found scattered bones, which had clearly been chewed on by animals. Among the bones, they found an intact rib cage and a jawbone. Frank immediately called the Gardaí to his property to investigate because it was very clear they were human bones at that point.
Right.
Once the Gardaí arrived, they were only able to recover 65% of the skeletal remains because animals had gotten to it and kind of took away parts of it.
Right, okay.
Eventually, through dental records, they determined the remains were that of Elaine O'Hara.
Okay.
However, they could not determine a cause of death.
Wow, okay.
Police immediately began investigating, and through interviews, they discovered that since 2007... Elaine had been seeing a married man.
Ooh, okay.
Elaine had been very open with her friends and family about her sex life and confessed to them that she was in a submissive BDSM relationship with this married man.
Oh boy, okay.
Her father told police that Elaine had confessed to him that she was in a relationship with a married father from Fox Rock who tied her up during sex.
Okay.
Which, odd thing to tell your dad.
Yeah, but if that's the only person she confides in her life, then...
I mean, that's true, yeah. Well, because she had a few friends at this point from... Remember, because she made some friends while hospital. And she also, like, talked to them about it as well.
Oh, okay.
But right. I just thought it was interesting because I'm like... I mean, I think her dad's, like, her best friend, obviously.
Of course, but still, it's not something you necessarily, you know...
I mean, it's just a little... I'm like, yeah, okay, you want to tell your dad that you get tied up? All right.
Yeah, that's a hard pass for me. So you don't have to tell me none of that stuff.
Don't worry, I don't do it. But if I did, I would not tell you.
I mean, that's good to know, but also don't care, don't want to know.
So police began trying to recover data from the phones that had been found in the lake.
Okay.
They also were trying to recover data from Elaine's computer, which had been found in her apartment.
Right, okay.
So the police discovered that back in 2007, Elaine had created a profile on an adult fetish website called alt.com.
Oh, okay.
She created a profile under the name Help Me Learn 36/F. So I guess the 36 is her age and F is like female.
Oh, okay.
Her page contained a graphic photo of herself and her bio stated that she wanted a master-slave relationship and that she loved being tied up with chains, but also, quote, she still had a lot to learn.
Wow. Okay.
She also described her perfect master on the site, saying that she wanted her master to be, quote, honest, loyal, frank, and trustworthy, possibly caring as well.
Okay.
She listed her preferred likes on the site as well. So I guess on the site, they have like a section where you can just check off like what you're into.
Right.
So she's into some different stuff, I'll say.
Okay.
She checked off bondage, collar, and leads leash. kidnapping, knife play, mummification, which I, okay, like all these other ones, like don't get me wrong, I'm not into it, but like if that, if you're into that, like, and you're doing it safely, like good for you. But I have never ever heard of mummification in terms of like sex play. So I was very confused by that. And I'm like, what, like, what do you, I don't understand. Like, do they just wrap you up?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I've never heard of that.
Me either. Like when I saw mummification, I was like, but how? Like, all I can think is they just like wrap you up like a mummy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
So she also put sensory deprivation, spanking, slapping in the face, and verbal humiliation.
Okay.
The police then discovered that Elaine had connected with a man on the site whose screen name was Architect 72. So if you hadn't guessed already, the guy's an architect.
And probably born in 72, maybe? Or...
I'm assuming.
Okay.
From there, they discovered that the screen name was linked to an email address, which was fetishboy@gmail.com.
Wow. All right.
Like fetishboy@gmail.com. Come on, that's funny.
Well, yeah. Normally I would say yes, but in the context of the story, probably.
I wonder if fetish man was taken and that's why he used boy. Because at this point, he's like in his late 30s. Like, you're not a boy, my friend.
Right.
Maybe like fetish man was already taken. He's like, well, gotta go with boy. Police were able to determine that a man by the name of Graham Dwyer was the creator of the account.
Rammed wire?
Graham.
Oh.
Dwyer.
Wow, I heard rammed wire.
You're like, wow, no wonder this guy's crazy. His parents really fucked him up with that name.
Wow. Okay, Graham Dwyer. All right.
Yeah, all Graham right. Dwyer. It's kind of interesting. I don't know if it's just like an Irish thing, but like I feel like Irish people always have like the coolest names that's literally sound like they should be like actors or like
characters in a book. Or...
Yeah, like it's like perfect names.
Yeah.
Even Graham Dwyer is like, he's an asshole, but his name's cool.
Okay.
So through fragments of emails, graphic homemade sex videos, and text messages, the police were able to retrieve from the phone. So the police went into the phones and the computers. Okay. They also got a warrant for Graham's computer because obviously now he's tied to it.
Right.
So they search all of it and they discover that the couple had an intense BDSM relationship throughout 2008. So they met in 2007 and it went all the way through 2008.
Okay.
The various videos showed Graham stabbing and abusing Elaine until Elaine begged him to stop, like during sex.
Wow. Okay.
The police also uncovered several other videos in which Graham had violent BDSM sex with multiple other women, which also consisted of stabbing and cutting during sex.
Jesus. Okay.
They determined that Graham had given Elaine the second phone that she had, and he also used a secret second phone to contact her to avoid his wife finding out about the relationship. Because remember, he's married.
Right.
Elaine was listed as slave in Graham's phone, and Graham was listed as master in Elaine's phone.
Wow. Okay.
In messages between the two, Graham told Elaine he had violent fantasies about raping and killing women. One message even included an elaborate list of ways that he could possibly murder a woman and get away with it.
Wow.
Within another message, Elaine confessed to Graham that she really wanted a baby. In response, Graham told her he would agree to impregnate Elaine if in return she helped him rape and murder another woman.
Oh, God.
Elaine reluctantly agreed to do that.
Really?
But this supposedly never actually occurred. But I kind of wonder if it did.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, it's just never been tied.
Right. Yeah.
Because, you know, they have this whole conversation where they plan it and she agrees to do it. And then, like, they just don't.
It doesn't happen. Right. Yeah. Huh. Well, I guess we'll never know. I mean,
unless they tie it to him later.
Yeah, somehow. Right.
Over time, Elaine began to realize that the relationship was unhealthy and one-sided emotionally, obviously.
You think?
In one message, she told Graham to fuck off so she could find another man to marry and start a family with, which I liked that. She told him to fuck off.
All right.
After that, their relationship kind of dwindled because she told him to fuck off.
Right.
However, in March of 2011, about 2 years before her murder, the relationship started back up again.
Okay.
In messages sent during this period of time, Graham told Elaine, quote, "I want to stick my knife in flesh while I am sexually aroused. I would like to stab a girl to death sometime."
Wow.
So he also told Elaine, quote, "My urge to rape, stab, or kill is huge. You have to help me control or satisfy it."
Wow. Okay.
Using the cell phone data, the police were able to track Graham's movements the day of Elaine's murder.
Okay.
So Graham had instructed Elaine to go near where the last witnesses saw her in these text messages.
Okay.
He told Elaine that she would be in a quote, a lot of pain for the next few days. Okay. In the messages, he told her that she would be punished for trying to kill herself without him. Because if you remember, right before she disappeared, she had been in the hospital.
Right.
He told her that he had a big punishment planned, and he said he was going to, quote, knife you in the guts.
Wow.
He directed Elaine to leave her iPhone at home, park her car at the park, cross the railway bridge, and go down to the shore to wait for him, which is where the witness saw her going.
Everything's matching, right?
At this point, the guardie arrested Graham Dwyer and charged him with murder. Okay. When interrogated, Graham completely denied knowing Elaine.
Okay.
Because he didn't realize all this evidence that they have.
Right.
However, the police told him they had security footage, which frequently showed him going to and from Elaine's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
They also informed him that his semen had been found in Elaine's bed. So at that point, Graham admitted to knowing Elaine and having a sexual relationship with her, but he denied killing her.
Of course.
So then the police show him all the messages that they have. Because remember, he thinks that he threw these in the lake, so he doesn't know they have them.
Right.
So he claimed that the messages that were sent to Elaine's phone on the day of the murder did not come from him.
Right.
And that Elaine must have taken her own life.
Okay.
And he claimed the phone was not his at all. The one that they had found in the lake.
Okay. The one that said master.
Yeah.
Okay.
At trial, Graham pled not guilty, despite all of the evidence against him. The trial began on January 22nd, 2015. So that's less than 2 years after Elaine's murder.
Okay.
The prosecution provided evidence of all of the messages, all of the emails, and all the videos. They claimed Graham was obsessed with sexual violence, rape, and murder by stabbing.
Mm-hmm.
They showed the jury numerous messages in which Elaine referred to Graham's repeated threats to stab and kill her.
Wow.
The prosecution called the mother of Graham's only child, which was his ex-girlfriend. Her name was Amir McShay, to testify. She claimed that during their relationship, Graham had admitted to her that he had sexual fantasies about stabbing women. She said she was against being stabbed herself during sex, but she did allow Graham to bring a knife into the bedroom and pretend to stab her while they had sex.
Wow.
Which, ooh, how awkward. Like,
yeah, like,
how would
yeah.
that even work?
I don't know. I mean, I don't even want to begin to try to think about it.
It would be terrifying to have like somebody pretending to stab you. Like, no, thank you. The couple broke up in 1996. And shortly after that, Graham ended up marrying a woman named Gemma Healy, which was his wife at the time of the murder.
Okay.
So he had one son, but it wasn't with his wife. It was with an ex-girlfriend.
All right.
The prosecutor, Sean Gurin, I hope I'm saying that right, claimed that Graham had developed an elaborate plan to kill Elaine in the days leading up to the murder. He also claimed that Graham was well aware of Elaine's mental health issues and her resulting low self-esteem, and basically used those things to manipulate her into a sexual relationship that she didn't truly want.
Of course.
To prove this, he showed evidence of texts sent by Elaine in which she repeatedly expressed, quote, not to be stabbed and, quote, not to be beaten by him. In one message, she told him she only wanted, quote, companionship, love, and ultimately a child.
Wow.
Gurin claimed that Graham was aware that Elaine had been in the hospital in the days leading up to her death and had developed a plan to lure her to a remote location in order to murder her, because he believed that it was the perfect time to do it because her family would just believe that she had been committed suicide.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a believable idea. So given her history,
which it's funny because ultimately that may have worked if all of the stuff he threw in the lake hadn't been found.
Right.
Because there's no, like, you're telling me that she just killed herself and then went and threw all her belongings in a lake?
Right. No, that's not how it works.
Furthermore, Gurin told the jury that Graham's attempt to hide Elaine's belongings in the lake was further proof of his intent, because if he hadn't intended to kill her, then why hide all that stuff?
Exactly. Why are you getting rid of evidence?
Graham's defense attorney, Remy Farrell, another cool ass name.
Another cool name.
I'm telling you, these you Irish people, man, you've got the coolest names. So Remy Farrell argued that Elaine had taken her own life. He said that there was no physical evidence tying Graham to Elaine's death, which there wasn't.
Right.
He also claimed there was no way of knowing if Elaine even had been murdered because pathologists hadn't been able to determine a cause of death. He claimed that it was well known that Elaine had suicidal tendencies and there was no evidence that she hadn't actually committed suicide. He also claimed that Elaine's BDSM lifestyle put her at risk, and there were any number of possible suspects in her death, as she had engaged in BDSM relationships with other men besides Graham.
Oh, okay.
So he's basically saying, listen, I think she committed suicide, but even if it was murder, there are like a lot of people it could be.
Right. Yeah. Casting that doubt or trying to.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it's pretty evident, I think, what happened. But because even if it was one of these other guys, why would they hide all of Graham's shit?
Exactly. Well, yeah, that's, I mean, that's the factor that, you know, kind of makes him a liar.
Yeah, it doesn't add up.
Right.
Farrell also claims that all of Graham's violent text messages were just part of Graham's sexual fantasies and not proof that he would actually be murderous in real life.
Okay.
So he's just saying that all that stuff was like pretend, like to get off, but that he wouldn't do it in real life.
Right. He didn't mean any of it. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
The prosecution said that the defense's claims were ridiculous because if Elaine had indeed killed herself, then how were her clothes and belongings found miles away from her body? I think she was found with some items of clothing on her,
right.
Obviously, because remember the dogs found the bones.
The dog had some, right.
But I guess other items of her clothing were found dumped in the lake. So
that's not a suicide.
Yeah. Like what? She just took off like half her clothes and then walked miles away. Because remember, her car was left at the park.
Right.
So then she just walked miles away into the woods, half naked, and like killed herself. Like, it makes no sense.
But killed herself how? There was no weapon found. There was nothing.
No. So basically the prosecutor alleged that because you know how he sent that text that said, I'm going to stab you in the gut.
Right.
So I guess if that were to be the case, there wouldn't necessarily be like knife marks on bone.
No, no. What I'm saying is the area, we're saying that if she did it to herself, when they found her bones, they would have found a weapon or something in that area because an animal's not going to run off with an instrument. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, like, unless I guess maybe they're alleging that she like took pills or something.
But walked all that way after throwing half of her clothes in a lake. And
yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, none of it. Yeah.
The trial went on for 3 months.
Wow.
And on March 27th, 2015, the jury, which consisted of 7 men and 5 women, they deliberated for over 7 hours.
Okay.
And ultimately returned a unanimous verdict of guilty.
Good for them.
I mean, honestly, it's kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah, but I mean, you definitely can see the defense's argument. I mean, it was all circumstantial evidence, but too much of it, all of it, or majority of it, you know, was linked to him. So you can't dismiss all of it. So, you know.
Well, and to me, like if I were on the jury, the deciding factor for me is all the stuff they found in the lake. Cause it's like, A, she obviously didn't commit suicide because that theory makes no sense.
Right.
So assuming that she was definitely murdered, like I said, why would another man who's having a relationship with her only throw away the things that were associated with Graham, who they probably wouldn't have even known about anyway?
Yeah. It just shows the intent of trying to get rid of evidence or get rid of items that would link him to her. So, you know,
yeah, because ultimately, even if they did know about Graham, don't you think they would have left all that shit so that it looked like he did it?
Exactly.
Like they're not going to try to hide shit that would connect someone else to their crime.
Right.
So after the verdict was read, Judge Tony Hunt said he, quote, 100% agreed with the jury's verdict. He said that he did not believe it was possible that Elaine had committed suicide, given all the evidence. He also, which I've never heard of this, I don't know if this is just an Irish thing. I'm pretty sure that this is something that was unique to this case because a lot of like the Irish newspapers that I looked at like talked about this like it like wasn't normal.
Okay.
But the judge also excused every member of the jury from jury service for the next 30 years.
Really?
Yeah. Like he basically said, like, you did such a good job that you don't have to serve again for 30 years.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's an Irish thing for sure.
But I wonder like if that's like a common thing in Ireland, like, or if that's like something that's like not really heard of very often.
Yeah, that would be interesting to know. But yeah, I mean, that doesn't happen in the United States. That's for sure.
Yeah. Our Irish listeners, like, if you know the answer, like, let me know.
Yeah, that's odd, but God bless. They don't have to do it.
Well, honestly, it's kind of a good rule in my opinion, because these poor people had to sit through all of that like graphic footage. And, yeah, I mean, you know, like having to watch somebody get stabbed, like while they're having sex.
Yeah.
They could use a break.
Yeah, for sure.
So Judge Tony Hunt then sentenced Graham Dwyer to life in prison. Following his sentence, Graham wrote a letter to his wife and his adult son, insisting that he was innocent and that Elaine had taken her own life.
Sure.
Okay. So Since then, Graham's defense has filed an appeal. So the defense claims that the police's collection of data from the phones and the computers in the case were unlawful because in 2014, so this is about a year after her death.
Okay.
In 2014, the European Data Retention Directive, so that's a directive that had previously allowed police to collect all that data.
Okay.
That directive had been overturned by the European Court of Justice. So if the European Court of Justice's ruling is upheld, it would lead to a review of how government agencies use certain types of data and basically could impact the admissibility of cell phone data evidence in all cases in which the case relied primarily upon that data to get a conviction.
Wow. Okay.
So potentially Graham Dwyer's conviction could be overturned if that ruling is upheld.
Okay.
So only a week ago, according to the Irish Independent, an advisor to the Court of Justice for the European Union said that, quote, the indiscriminate retention of mobile phone data could only be justified in cases involving national security and could not be justified for the prosecution of offenses.
Oh, boy.
But he's just an advisor. So basically, right. He's giving an expert opinion on what will happen, but that hasn't been put into law yet.
Okay.
Currently, the European Court has entered a deliberation period. So they're actually deliberating on that right now.
Oh, okay.
So an ultimate ruling is expected in March. So I'm going to keep an eye on it and I'll give you guys an update when that verdict comes out.
Hopefully they keep it in place because.
But what's crazy is this case was suggested to us before that happened. That was only a week ago.
Right.
That they went into deliberation. So How crazy is that? But yeah, so he's in jail for life.
For now, anyways.
Yeah, fingers crossed that it stays that way. That's the case of Elaine O'Hara.
Wow, okay. Sad case. I mean, very unfortunate, but hopefully they don't overturn that ruling and that guy stays in jail for, he killed her. He deserves to pay for it. So for sure. So
yeah, hopefully he stays away.
Yep.
I will let you all know. I'm going to keep an eye on that because it's supposed to be, they're guessing the verdict will be read in March. So
okay.
I'll keep an eye on it and I'll update you as soon as that comes out. But we actually have two questions this week from my two oldest daughters.
Oh, okay.
They don't listen to the podcast, but they know we do it. And they asked if they could ask a question. And I told them that I would let them listen to this part of it. So,
okay.
The first one is for you.
Okay.
Which this is actually a really good question. I was like impressed. What conviction are you most proud of from throughout your career?
That's a good one. I actually, believe it or not, have one currently in the process. It's going through the court system now. It's a case that I handled back in one of the first major cases I had. Long story short, the driver was speeding and ran a red light and was under the influence of alcohol and some narcotics. And he struck a vehicle that was being driven by a husband, and his wife was in the passenger seat. He was taking her to work. She ended up dying like 3 days later in the hospital for injuries. And her son is actually a law enforcement officer in Texas. I got the case as like a delay because they didn't call me initially because she didn't die until days after. And there were some mistakes made by it was one of the smaller departments in the area that we cover, but I was able to make an arrest. He's actually been on house arrest now since 2017. And I just found out from the state attorney that he's going to take a plea in December and he's going away. He's going to be doing state time. So that case was real at the beginning, was real. It wasn't a good case as far as I kind of started behind the eight ball, so to speak. Like I had to do a lot of working backwards and obtaining warrants and stuff to obtain evidence that I would have been able to get right away had I started working the crash right away. So that one, once it's said and done, I mean, it's not 100% yet, but that one's been a case, one of my major cases that have stuck with me that I'm happy about, that the resolution is going to be good.
Oh, good. And then the next one is, have you ever cried while working a case?
Absolutely. Yep.
I already knew the answer to that, but that was her question. So I said, I already know the answer to that, but I'll include it for our listeners.
Yeah, I have several times. It's doing what I do and seeing what I've seen. One of the saddest ones, and one that I'll talk about. I was on the road. It was a long time ago. I was literally sitting at a light, and about a block down the road from me, I heard the crash. It was a car crash. Ironically, I was working the road, but so I rushed over to it. And unfortunately, the driver of the vehicle, he was trapped and I couldn't do anything for him. And I guess his neck was like broken, but he was like trying to talk to me, but he couldn't. And all I could do was tell him, you know, the firemen are coming, rescue's coming, you know, just hang in there. And I stayed with him, but I couldn't do anything for him. I couldn't get him out of the car. I couldn't do CPR. I couldn't do anything. He essentially just like died in front of me. That was a hard one when it first happened, because that's kind of like the first time I'd experienced something like that. It was very early in my career, and the actual person passing away in front of me and me just being kind of helpless and not being able to do anything other than just provide comfort to him and being with him, you know, like, but I couldn't do anything for him. So that one stuck with me for a little while.
Yeah, I don't blame you on that one.
Made me cry a little bit when you feel fucking helpless, you know, and then you have this person that's begging for your help and you can't, you know, like, it crushed me. So, but yeah, several times I've cried on the job. It's a natural part of being a human being. So I didn't always think that way, but I know better of that now. So
that's a healthy way to think.
Yeah. You can't, you know, all this men don't cry bullshit. If you don't, you go crazy. Yeah. It's not good. So it took me a little while to figure that out, but you know, two good questions. I'm going to have to let them know that I was impressed by those questions.
I know. I thought, I was like, wow, those are well thought out.
They are.
So if you could please follow us on our social media accounts. We are at Can't Make This Shit Up Pod on Instagram. We also are on Facebook. If you search Can't Make This Shit Up, a true crime podcast discussion group, we're on there. Also, if you want to send us some more questions, I have a whole list going. So you can either do that. There's a link in our Instagram bio where you can make case suggestions or ask us questions, or you can always just email either case suggestions or questions to can'tmakethisshituppod@gmail.com. Also, if you could please give us some reviews on Apple, that would really help us out.
Yep.
So next week you guys are in for a special treat because we're having our first guest on the podcast.
Oh my.
Which will be my husband. He's somewhat of an expert in the case we're going to be talking about.
Should be interesting.
Yeah. So that should be a fun one. So we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for listening.
We certainly appreciate it.
So until next time.
Happy Thanksgiving. It's coming up.
Oh, yeah. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Those of you that celebrate it, hope everybody has a good holiday.
All the good things.
Yep.
So until next week, bye.
Bye.